Hello everyone, welcome to Darren Matthews and Sometimes Friends, the podcast where I speak to people much more interesting than myself. Please enjoy. Hello everyone and welcome to episode 15 of Darren Matthews and Sometimes Friends, the supposedly weekly podcast that I seem to consistently fail in putting out weekly. Because the show is called Darren Matthews and Friends and Sometimes Friends, this time I've actually went and got an old friend of mine to come on and have a chat with us. So, Gino Lynch, say hello.
Hello, how's it going? Glad to be here.
That's all right. That's just because I took you for lunch first, you bollocks. Gino's an old school friend of mine who also works in the entertainment industry. The difference between Gino and myself is Gino actually makes money at what he does. So, but you're a bit more behind the camera these days. You're a bit of both, aren't you?
Both, yeah. Yeah. I try to split my time with both, but it's always feast or famine with either. Okay. So, you know, when I'm working and earning money, it's hard to do the my on front of camera stuff, the comedy videos that I do, the creative stuff that I do. It's hard to do that and work and earn money at the same time. Try my best, like.
Right, well we'll start professional first.
Right.
Before we talk about the insanity that you create.
Okay. Do you want to go from the top again?
No, we don't. I want to keep this rolling because this is good. I like this organic feeling.
Okay.
So, Gino, what is your professional role? What is your actual job title?
So I'm a lighting technician in film and TV.
Okay. Give us a wee list of us. Give me something off the CV.
Game of Thrones, but I mean half the country worked in Game of Thrones, so yeah. That's no big deal. Like, Game of Thrones, worked on that for a bit, not as much as, you know, some other people. I dipped in and out of that really and worked a lot in projects that were coming in outside of Game of Thrones, you know. Krypton, a TV series for sci-fi, was heavily involved in that with the lighting design, with even the art design and the sets in terms of how the lights manipulate the sets. And, you know, lighting, when you get into genres like sci-fi and stuff, becomes a lot more dependent on lighting because of the amount of different colours involved, and, you know, you've spaceships and you've all sorts of holograms and, you know, there's just lights everywhere in sci-fi. So sci-fi then becomes part of the set design, whereas you don't really get that in things like Game of Thrones or whatever. It's big lighting, but all you've got is the sun, the moon and flames. That's it. That's just resources.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? Where sci-fi, you can make up a light. You can make a character out of a light. Do you know what I mean? It's up to your imagination what way you want the lighting to enhance the narrative, if you like.
So from what you do, there is obviously no genre that you can't work in. So I mean, you go from working on Krypton, which is massive lighting design, project, but then you might be lighting a period drama for BBC the next week.
Yeah, or you could be in a sitcom the week after or whatever. But we'd be technicians, so we, like, you know, it'd be the DOP, director of photography, cinematographer, would be the one who's actually lighting it. You know, who's the one who's got the actual ideas for the lighting, the style of lighting that he wants, you know. So he would just articulate that to you and then you would set the lights up accordingly, you know.
That job, though, that's obviously something you advance to. Would that be something you'd want to do? Or, like, the DOPs all start as technicians? Is this sort of like the training
scheme? Not really. Funny enough, in America, the trajectory in America is a lot more, you go through lighting and then you become a cinematographer. A lot more in America. It doesn't really work like that over here. Most DOPs come through camera or film school, you know, the study of the film school, and then they come out and just start DOPing shorts and then work their way up from doing shorts to maybe commercials, then to doing TV dramas, then to doing feature films, you know. Whereas here, lighting people in the lighting department just tend to stay in the lighting department, and then the gaffer, he's the head of the department.
Gina's going to die in here.
It's that old cold that's going around.
That, that was the first time I've ever had to pause this podcast because I guess was about to die.
I've been down for 2 weeks, but no, I'm battling away.
That's okay.
So yeah, you know, you can get to, you know, gaffer would be the head of the lighting department there, but then I would do also, you know, in the big studio jobs like Krypton, I'd be doing the lighting desk, you know, so you've got thousands of lights on set and they're all controlled on a lighting board, a lighting desk, you know, and stuff like that. So I find that stuff more challenging, more interesting, but.
Right, he's okay. I've paused it. He's
a sick name.
Heimlich maneuver, rubbed his back, gave him some more milk. He's all right
now. The podcast abruptly ends, just presume
you've
died. I've gone to hospital or I've died.
Yeah, that's okay. The good news is we're on the Lisbon Road, so the hospital's only down the road.
I'll be dis.
The bad news is they've closed the ER.
What's the food like in it?
I don't know. I've never been in hospital, so I don't know. Thankfully not. I haven't been in hospital. That's a touch wood one, that one. But so that's your professional terminology, yeah, what you do.
Yeah.
But since I've known you, that's not all you do.
No.
Because from your own point of view, you are director, writer.
Well, yeah, yeah,
cameraman.
That's the hobby at the minute. Do you know what I mean? Obviously, like when I was younger, my aspirations always, when I was, I'd say from about 12, 13, 14, was always to make my own stuff, to shoot stuff. And I've always been into comedy. Comedy's the genre that took me in, that I know when I watch it and go, I could do that. You know, I can see how this works. I can make my, I just felt comfortable with doing comedy, because I think comedy's a good way of expressing yourself, and it lends itself nicely to social media. But yeah, you remember from years ago, like, what are we now,
34.
You remember from years ago, remember when we started out with VHS cameras and we were doing spoofs on Jackass?
Yeah.
So do you remember?
We'll do a bit of background now. I think that might still be, there might be some of those on YouTube, but I'm afraid to say.
I think they are floating about, yeah.
Floating about. So the very first, does that count as filmmaking for you?
Well, it is. I mean, you get a camera and it wasn't, jeez, we're going to say that now, old now. You know, you don't think you're old until you come out with sayings like this. Where back in the day, there was no phones.
I didn't feel old until you said VHS.
Yeah.
But that
was the thing. There was no DVD players. Oh!
Yeah.
We're even past DVDs at this stage.
Yeah, and
we're
editing,
all the streaming and stuff.
Editing on VCRs.
Yeah, two VCR machines that you would, you'd have what you filmed on a VCR recording onto a second VCR, and that was your edit. Oh. Now you can edit on a bloody phone, like put music on it, slow it down and all. Like, I remember putting music onto one of the Jackass videos we did and, getting music onto it. And it was like, wow, I cannot, because I bought this editing machine. So the VCR looped into the editing machine. And then I recorded the music into the editing machine. And do you want to see the size of this thing? And all I was doing was recording a bit of music over the top of the VHS. We thought we were brilliant.
I think what's mad about that is as well is, like, you couldn't probably put that on YouTube now because there's copyright.
This was a tape passed around school.
Yeah.
And it got, they showed it in school one day for all the students when they were 14 or 15. Somebody had the video and they put it on. The teacher turned it off very quickly.
So pretty much, we don't have many views that got, because that's before that.
That's before that time.
Before YouTube. YouTube's only 2006.
That's only 13 years. You think now YouTube's been about a lifetime, don't you?
So if we're 34, we're talking, we were filming that 20
years ago.
20 years ago, maybe more?
Yeah. So
that was the first, oh my God.
Late 90s.
Do you think maybe it comes from you coming from like an entertainment family?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Because the Lynches in your ear are very, very much theatre people.
Yeah, yes, they are. Well, I think a lot of it comes from, but my grandmother, she just passed away over Christmas time there, and she's originally Italian, and she was massive into films and TV. You know, the TV became a real thing for her and all the kids, which one of them was my dad. He works in the film and TV now, but he works in lighting like myself. But then his sister, she teaches drama in St. Paul's. His other sister, Susan, she's been on countless TV and film, roles. John Lynch as well, he's done countless film and TV roles, and a lot of roles of films about the Troubles, which got very popular in Uri, and stuff like that. So him and Susan have wonderful careers,
Funny enough, really randomly, I was just flicking through Netflix and I just clicked on a film the other day and Your Uncle John was in it. I was watching Black Death.
It's a really good film.
Yeah, I like that. It's like a sort of a weird horror movie, but it's good. Yeah. I liked it because, number one, I like horror. It's just kind of like an hour and a half to kill, and I was like, watch a movie.
It was a horror medieval type. It was cool, like, it was really, really good. And acting was good.
Sean Bean dies.
Good story.
You see that often. Man dies in every film.
So, yeah, they were acting, whatever. And I remember as a kid seeing, there was a Channel 4 film review show. And the name of the father came on. We were all up at my grandparents' house watching this review show, and it was for in the name of the father. And it was a massive film that came out. John had a big role in it for at least the first half of the film. Anyway, yeah. He was one of the Guildford Four. And I remember we were all crowded around the TV watching this. And this is the day when you're only four channels. But it was a TV review show where it was very much like at the end of Come Down With Me, where they give the scores at the end.
Yeah.
Well, they get four people to go and watch films, and then at the end in the taxi home they give their scores. Well, they all give a 10 out of 10, they all got 40, and everybody in the living room just went crazy, you know. And that always just stuck in my head when I was younger, you know.
This is the industry to be in, sort of stuff.
Well, yeah, you know, all that sort of thing rubs off on you, I think. But, you know, as much as they all acting was what drew them in, what drew me in was creating, was making your own, was telling your own stories, was directing, you know, that's always what excited me early on. And then... But when it comes to like acting or performing in something, the first thing that I watched that drew me towards performing or acting in anything was The Office. When I first seen The Office, the British Office, I just, you know, that was 2001, 2002. It's probably 16, 17, 18 at the time when it came out. And I was just like, wow, Ricky Gervais, it just blew me away with that performance, you know. And he wrote it, he directed it and all, and when I seen that, it's like, right, that's what I want to do. Beforehand, I was writing film scripts and, you know, wanting to be a film director or whatever. But then when I seen The Office, it goes, right, I want to make something like The Office. That was me.
Okay, fair enough. So, like, do you think, was that the first time you saw where it was somebody who had written, directed, starred? Like, yeah. Gervais does everything in that.
Yeah.
So was it the idea that you could do that, or...?
Yeah, it was. And comedy is always something that drew me in, you know, even funny people and stuff, you know, characters around Yuri and stuff, always really, really, I always fell in love with them, you know, sort of a way, you know, like say, like I worked in a bar for, on numerous bars around Yuri for years, and the real sort of alpha male type characters, the real, you know what Yuri's like for characters, it's just full of them, like,
yeah,
full of characters, and I think that all comes from, from the troubles and all. Yuri didn't have any sort of industry and stuff. All they had was a community of people that just knew each other's business. And
I just love that we mentioned Yuri and suddenly sirens happen. Like this is...
But you know, like when I was working in a bar at the time, the characters in the bars, I just loved them. I just always got sucked in by them, you know. And yeah. I used to be laughing at them and stuff like that, you know. So comedy comical is not a right word. Comedy and funny people and funny characters have always drawn me in, you know.
There's a great comedian from Ballymena called Paddy McGahey, and pretty much the reverse of what you've just said. He said, he was like, people here in this country, people are always a bit of a character. That's pretty much mentally ill. Anywhere else in the world, they'd be mentally ill, but he's a bit of a character. That's what it is.
But everybody says there's no place like home and all that, which is true to a certain extent, but... Everywhere's different, you know. Like, I lived in Liverpool for a while, I lived in London for a while, and there's some crazy characters in Liverpool, don't get me wrong, like, some hilarious people, you know, Liverpool's full of characters, but it's different, you know, like, Yuri people are so funny with even the way they do things, the way they say things, their mindset, you know what I mean? And I say that, and I love it, and I'm not criticising the place, that I just love Yuri, you know, and that's why I love it, I just love the people there, and that's where... You know, my writing thing always came from. That's what sucked me in for creating things. Those types of people, you know. It wasn't like I want to tell a story about, you know, Queen Elizabeth, or I want to make a film about World War II or a piece of history or anything like that. It was always people and characters that just inspired me to... You know,
I think from that, I mean, the number one thing people say whenever you want to write is start off, write with what you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is why, I mean, even comedy from here, stuff like Lisa McKee doing Derry Girls, she just wrote her childhood.
Yeah.
That's what that was.
Yeah.
So your stuff, like when you do your characters, so Taxi Joe is a taxi man in Yuri.
Yeah.
So when people say, oh, what's the inspiration? You're just like, I know 10 guys that are like that. But and they're an amalgamation.
Like exactly. So he's like a Frank, I haven't said who's he based on, but it's a Frankenstein of...
Yeah.
Loads of people. He's just sort of encompasses what Nuri's about.
Yeah.
And, you know, a certain aspect of Nuri in that people that are still living in the 1980s and the concept of a fish out of water is a real, you know, it's been tried and tested in comedy for centuries, you know. You put someone who's uncomfortable within their environment and you're going to create comedy, you know. So this guy's the ultimate, you know, he's... hasn't a clue about women. He doesn't use new technology, and his reference points are 1980s all the time. You know, it's just that mindset, and he won't get out of it. You know, and he's set in his ways and stuff like that.
Is it a thing for the character? So one of the things I remember reading, I think it was Kevin Smith was talking about. He says whenever you're writing for yourself, it's always really tempting to give yourself the big lines.
Yeah.
But for the good of the project, sometimes it's better to give the other people that. So I've worked on bits and pieces of you where you've been sort of nearly kind about it, where you're giving the funnies to other people.
Yeah.
Like when we did that, we did like a parody thing. Gino wrote and directed a very funny wee short series of clips, which was Reservoir Republicans.
Yeah.
Which was pretty much Reservoir Dogs, the trailer reshot.
Reshot just with Republican references.
Reshot with Republican references and very sort of Newry style and South Armagh and all those bits and pieces. But when you wrote that, like, I got some lovely lines out of it, which is great, and some of the other characters got some great laughs. You didn't keep them for yourself.
No, well, my goal is, you know, I've been studying sitcom since, watched The Office, studying it, reading about it, reading lots of material on it, and it's a very definitive thing, and I'm reading lots about story and all. My goal is always story. It's always telling the best story. So it doesn't matter who gets the lines. I don't care. It doesn't even matter if there's a scene where taxis were just sitting there. I don't care. It's just story. You're telling the best story and making the audience get the most out of it as possible. It's all my focus is on, you know? And the thing, you know, because you're in it, I think when you write, an advantage of when you write the material and you're in it yourself, it makes life a lot easier in a lot of ways because you don't have to articulate
what you think
to someone else. And then, you know, if I'm doing my thing as Taxi Joe, then other people can bounce off it. So it does make your life easier, even though it's more to do to direct an episode of something or to shoot something as well as being in it. It has its advantages in that, you know, a lot of times an actor will bring their own thing to the table and it mightn't work for the story, you know. Then you might have to articulate that in a certain way to go, you know. It's just the advantage of writing and being in something yourself where you just know the material, you know what you want to achieve, and makes the directing process a bit easier, I think.
Is there anything... Well, one of the things as well is obviously because it's sort of a college industry and you're down at home and you're... If I'm home, I'll come out. Even if it's I'm holding a camera or driving a car or doing something to help out, everybody sort of chips in. There's a lot of lads that just sort of help out, which is kind of funny because you can't do it on your own, but it's great crack. We just hung out one day and I think we were just eating kebabs and drinking coffees, but we shot a scene.
Yeah, like, the stuff we're doing at the minute is still very small, but in Newry it's massive, you know, sort of way.
Yeah.
But Newry's small, you know, so it's like, you know, my material is very, very, very popular in Newry, but as I said, Newry's small. You go outside of Newry, and occasionally in Belfast people will recognise me and stop me for photographs or whatever. But in Newry, because it's so popular and people are so into it, people want to be a part of it. People want to be into it. And I think another thing where it strikes the chord of people in Newry, and this is a thing about YouTube, a thing about Facebook and stuff, is you can really localise something and create something for your community. Whereas years ago when you just had the TV, you know, UTV weren't making sitcoms about a taxi driver in Newry.
Yeah.
No, BBC were doing Give My Head Peace and all, which is a broader thing about Northern Ireland. But the thing about Facebook now and all these different characters you see popping up on, you know, Sir Steve O'Timothy and all these different, he does Galway type comedy, and then you've got that Fop and Egypt's and all, and you know what I mean? And then you've Colin Geddes doing his, you know, thing in Belfast, you know. People in them specific areas really strikes a chord with them, and they've never had it before. They've never had material based on their life, their community, you know.
I suppose it's maybe becomes a bit more precious to them because you're like, Jesus, that guy's actually talking about something that is quite literally down that street.
Yeah.
Or right up the alleyway, if you will. Which I probably should use as the first analogy. So this way I write differently. My writing's it's sort of weird because I do local reference stuff obviously when I'm gigging in Newry, but my references change no matter where I am, and it makes the audience feel comfortable
because
I'm like, look, I've done a bit of research and this is what I think of how we walk around your town, this is what I know, this is what I do. You're taking that idea because mine's written and then spoken in a live setting. You're doing that, but you're doing visual as well.
A lot of the videos are in and around references, points of Newry and stuff. But then, you know, ultimately you want the channel to grow, you want the videos to grow, you want the whole thing to get bigger. So you have to be a lot less specific with certain, you know, you can still do your Newry videos, you know, but then for example, of a sitcom written, and it's a very sort of about universal themes. You know, there's no reference points to specific things in society or specific things in pop culture or whatever that only people in Newry will get. It's a very broad, it's, you know, Newry characters going on with Newry people, but about stories that are a bit more sort of accessible to everyone else, you know.
I was going to say, because one of the most popular videos on the channel is not about Newry. It's about, you have a, because you did a Choose Life, Newry. Yeah. But then you expanded that into a Choose Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
That was a big video. That became very popular.
Yeah.
And I think that was a new horizon, because people maybe in Limavady or Omer, I mean, by our concerns over the ass side of the...
They're,
I know that reference. There, I get this. So you expanded it out. And it worked really well.
Yeah. It was starting to... And funny enough, like, when I was doing the Choose Northern Ireland video, I think it's 7 minutes. You know, when you look back at it, I should have made it shorter. But I had to rush it out for Christmas, you know. It was one of those things where no shortage of material on it. I could have done another video. I could have done 14 minutes.
Yeah.
Of, you know, because there's that many references of Belfast and the different parts of Belfast and the different, you know, the conflict between Catholics and Protestants and the stuff of politics and Parliament. Like, Northern Ireland lends itself so well to comedy because there's so much material. It's such a crazy country with a ridiculous, you know, political system with a ridiculous, you know, it's just stuck between Ireland and Britain, and you get all these crazy characters and Storm and stuff. So there's a plethora of material to work with. And that's why I think, you know, you've Derry Girls being very successful. I think you're going to get other sitcoms here being very successful. Because I think the environment of Northern Ireland is just a comical environment, you know?
Yeah, it is such a weird place. It's a unique place.
Yeah.
Because
there's just conflict everywhere.
Yeah.
Everywhere. You know, that's the essential ingredient for comedy is conflict.
Number one, the conflict is that some people don't believe it is a place.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, we're from Newry.
People would disagree with what it is.
Exactly. Is it a country? Is it a state?
People would say, no, we live in the country of Ireland. And then someone would turn around, what do you mean the country of Ireland? We live in Great Britain. You know.
There you go.
United Kingdom.
Yeah. But this is it. This is, I think what's part of the funny thing is that where there's actually a YouTube video that has to explain the difference.
Yeah.
Between the British Isles, Great Britain, the United Kingdom.
Yeah.
Like, that happens, and people bring that into everyday conversation. And you say conflict is what the funny is. It definitely is, because I get a lot of material out of that.
Yeah.
And it's the fact when people start talking about, like, I'm doing a gig in Derry on Friday night.
Yeah.
I know it's going to be a mixed crowd.
Yeah.
Do I say Derry? Do I say Londonderry? Yeah. Do I get stabbed after the gig?
Well, now then the news have to say Derry, Londonderry, don't they?
Yes.
They have to say both.
Yes.
Which is, again, you know, another thing that you could just satirize and, you know, it's a comedic thing within itself that somewhere has two places because of sectarianism.
Something that comes up in my stand-up, and it's a true story, was when I was in Vietnam.
Yeah.
I was in Ho Chi Minh City. Ho Chi Minh City used to be called Saigon.
Yeah.
And we were doing a walking tour, and the wee guy was like, this is Old Saigon. Mm. So we're in Ho Chi Minh City, but this part is called Old Saigon. Mm. The whole city used to be called Saigon. And then they were like, now, obviously, it's a very unique place because there's nowhere else in the world that has two names. And I was like, excuse me.
I think you're wrong.
And I just said this to a tour guide, and he was just like, where the fuck is that? Like, people don't know we're here.
Yeah.
We're, maybe here in this country, we're very fucking self-important. Like, people here do think it's the center of the universe.
Yeah.
And that's where the funny is.
Yeah.
Because you've never been anywhere else.
Yeah.
So that's what's hilarious.
Yeah. You get people that think here is the center of the universe, and they're just so closed fence to the real world.
And even more so, Taxi Joe believes Newry is the center of the universe.
And that's where that comes from too, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, you have the channel. So, here's the thing, where's the best place to watch you? Because you're on all the formats.
YouTube's probably the best place to see the stuff, but my YouTube channel doesn't have as much traction as Facebook.
Yeah.
Facebook's the most popular place to watch all the stuff.
So Facebook, if you want to watch what do we search for?
Just call Beef Balls.
Just Beef Balls.
Beef Balls, or type in Taxi Joe, whatever.
Okay, so that's if you want to see some of the content that Gino's done, where's the Beef Balls or just Beef
just
Balls?
I've just changed it to Beef Balls, made it a bit more sort of marketable, you know.
Punch it.
There's a couple of words, the Beef Balls, and I hated the name for ages, and it's like, why do I have a title to my Facebook page? Why is it called a question?
Yeah.
You know, so my Facebook page was called Where's the Beef Balls? It's just a brutal name for something. So I just thought for ages, what am I going to, I just call it Beef Balls.
Okay. I mean, people are going to ask you what the story is behind this. Funny enough, I was chatting to Cormac McDermott, who does the Notorious Barrack Boys.
Right.
Now, I said to him, I was like, where did you come up with the name for the page? He studied, like, or he studied film in Queens.
Yeah.
And he said his idea for his production company, and it's on the podcast, came up because when he was doing it, they were asked to create a production company.
Yeah.
And he says everyone else in his class was real snooty, arty people. Mm. And they were coming up with, like, you know, like, Crystal Skies films and all this stuff. And he was like, I wanted to make it the most West Belfast scummy name I could think of.
Yeah.
So we talked about the guys who drink 3 liters of cider. So he was like, I'm the Barrack Boy. This is Barrack Boys Productions.
Yeah.
And that's what he did. And it just stuck from a university project.
Well, the Words of the Beef Boss that we had, it was one of our very, very, very early videos before even the Beef Balls channel. It was for Newry News. We used to do a series of videos called Newry News, and we'd done one on Margaret Thatcher, which went ballistic in Newry, like, when she passed away. And one of the headlines was, you know, cue these two balls in his hand from a Chinese restaurant. So Chinese food in Newry is the cuisine of Newry, isn't it? They've adopted China as their number one cuisine.
Yeah, but you can get chips with.
That's what I'm saying. They've manifested it into their own thing.
Unbelievable.
And, you know, you can get chicken balls, you can get pork balls. I remember one night we were all eating Chinese, and I just go, why can you not get beef balls? Like, and everyone just started laughing. And then there was a real thing, everyone go, why can you not get beef balls? Like, and you never see them anywhere.
Like,
what do you think about it? If you had a bit of beef and you wrapped it in a load of batter and threw it into a deep fat fryer, it's not going to come out great, is it? Because it's a bit of beef. It's going to be a bit chewy, like.
Probably. But to come off the production.
Where's the beef? So that was the sketch was, you know, was one of the news items. You know, people are confused as to, you know, why there's no beef balls, and it's just cute going, you've your pork balls and then you've got your chicken balls. Where's the beef balls, like? And that's where the name came from. That just stuck. But it was the line off that video that everyone just shared a cue all the time. Where's the beef balls?
So completely accidentally, mate. This was, if somebody said to you, come up with a name for a production company, you'd go way off and think about it.
It's just
idea.
A line in the thing.
Oh, madness.
So now it's just called beef balls, and I was like, why do you call it back? Just that's what it's called. Yeah, so get on. It's not important what the name of it is it? It's more. Yeah, you want material. Hopefully, is a lot more important than the name of the page.
One of my favorite ones, because I'm just now thinking of all the. Well, as you say, like Chinese food is probably there are. I mean, there's two Chinese restaurants for every three people in Newry. Like, so
yeah. I'd say there's 20 to 25 of them in Newry.
Possibly
Chinese, and there's new ones opening all the time.
15 of them are inedible.
There's big. Some of them are lovely. So, big shout if you ever come to Newry, go to a Chinese.
Yeah.
Which one? Kaz is lovely. Go to Kaz.
Kaz.
Or Jimbo on Canal Street.
This is brilliant because when I'm up here, I've never had a proper Newry accent.
Right.
Being from the Brook.
Yeah.
So I never got the proper Ape. I never got that, even though a mile and a half away. It's like you cross under the 18 arches.
Yeah, that just vanishes.
It vanishes.
Yeah.
But
there's
like a wee section. We could get a map and draw where Newry accent is.
Yeah. Well, I was brought up in Newry, so I think I have a bit of it, like, you know.
Yes. But even then, it comes into the comedy where I then find myself, when I'm doing your bits and pieces, I'm doing an impression of my own accent. I can't just talk, you know, but it's maybe because I've been living abroad, it's softened.
Yeah.
Because I'm on
stage.
Well,
that's the thing, you know, like, because I lived in England for years, and when I lived in England, my accent changed slightly, and I had to, because when I was in Liverpool, people didn't understand what I was saying.
Yeah.
You know, I was speaking too fast.
Or you couldn't go, right, bro, a couple of pints, eh?
The people are just going, sorry, what was that? You know, and I'm starting to annoy you, like, it's like, can you not speak English? You know, they've got a big dirty Yorkshire accent. It's not as if they speak the Queen's English, like, you know. It's like, why can you not understand this? Ye numpty. But you had to slow down for them to understand you.
I had that up here when I moved up to Belfast, when people would be like, mate, you sound funny. And I'm like, have you ever heard yourself speak? I'm like, go and record your voice and listen back and then tell me I sound funny. So it's pretty mad. But from you expanding that video to be all of Northern Ireland, are we, like, is Taxi Joe ever going to go on the road?
No, he'll always be from Newry. Like, I mean, he might do Belfast videos. He might, you know, he might do an airport.
That's what I mean.
Might go to an airport and do an airport run, or I might do a Wish You Were Here type holiday show where he's in Belfast and reviews Belfast and says it's a dump because, you know, it's too cosmopolitan for him, maybe, or it's too urban for him or something.
They've only got two taxi companies.
Yeah. So yeah, I'll expand it that way. But the thing about Facebook, YouTube, all that sort of stuff is now, you know, you can just keep banging material out, videos, photographs. You know, we have, you know, our videos are on Instagram now, right? Like IGTV, they call it. And it's getting good enough traction on that as well. And but you have to recut all the videos for IGTV because the people look at them videos differently. They look at them long ways on their phone rather than sideways on YouTube. You know what I mean? So you have to do different versions of every video for
it's the
which takes time, and you know, but which is great. Like and you can see this is, you know, comedy is just going this way. You know, people are, everything's going phones, and phones are getting better and better. I'm shooting a lot of videos just on my phone now, and I've got brilliant cameras in the house. I've got all the great sound equipment, lighting equipment, and all. But phones are getting that good. I'm shooting a lot of material just on phones.
And without being too much of an advert, what phone are you using to film?
The new iPhone. iPhone 11.
iPhone 11. Pro. Who, what director was it that made a video only using an iPhone a couple of years ago?
Well, there was a film in the Tangerine in the cinema.
Yeah.
Was all shot on an iPhone.
Is that the one that's in like a mental hospital or something like that?
No, I know that one you're talking about. But this Tangerine, it was like about transvestites, I think, or transvestites, I think.
Okay.
And it was a really big film, and done great in the festival circuit around the world, and got big award nominations and all. It was all done on a phone, you know. The video quality on phones now are brilliant.
So pretty much, well, one of the other things I was going to say is you started off with two VHS machines and a VHS. Was it mini DV? Was it the camera?
Mini DV, yeah.
Mini DV cassette. So it's like a wee tiny VHS is what we started filming on. So now, basically, you've been doing that for years, and you've moved with the technology.
Yeah.
Like, I remember you telling me about, like, RED cameras years ago that were going to be millions of pounds. And you're like, you can just buy one of them now.
Yeah.
That's how the technology, how quick it goes.
Yeah. Well, they released a phone, believe it or not, RED.
Right.
RED camera released a phone last year that you can plug add-ons on with lenses and all sorts of shit, you know. But I think it flopped. You know, the phone market is Apple and Google. That's it. You know, you're not really, you know, you need, nobody's going to compete with them. So, you know, that's what the way they were looking at. They could see where the future was going. And that's, you know, phones now, everyone is on their phone.
You know, we're recording a podcast on my phone.
Yeah, exactly. And TV companies don't realise, or advertising companies are still locked into the 1990s and the 2000s way of people consuming material. So, like, now, as I said, people are on their phones. People don't watch adverts on TV anymore, but there's still multi-million pounds getting spent on them. So people still, TV companies still look at viewing figures and stuff on the TV. You know, how many viewing figures has this show got? And that'll be based on how much the adverts are going to be costing on that TV show.
Right.
But the difference between now and the 1990s is when the adverts come on, people grab their phones.
Yeah.
Or they have it recorded on their DVR and they'll fast forward the adverts. People aren't engaged in them anymore. Phones, that's where everyone's attention is.
The other thing is as well, because you said you've been filming on a phone, does that mean, basically what I would say to people is, whenever it talks about generation of content, or you talk to people and they say, oh, I've always wanted to do this and do that, you can do it now.
Everyone can do it now.
Do it with your phone.
You know, like, if I had all this when I was in my teens, on like I could do everything on a phone. You could do everything on a phone. Like, you have a distribution network on your phone. So you can film something on your phone. There's Final Cut on your phone. You can edit on your phone. Then you can upload it to YouTube from your phone. There's, you know, Photoshop you can get in your phone for doing screen grabs, for doing photographs, you know, the promotion material on it. And then you've got that distribution network where you've access to billions of people. You know, in the 1990s, your only way to access people was, you know, to get funding, to get a short film project off the ground, get it into the festival circuit, then, you know, maybe you'll get a feature film next, or go through the whole television ladder of just climbing, getting through all the different stages and getting green lit by, you know, the BBC or Channel 4 or whatever to get your TV project made for it finally to be seen by loads of people. Now you have instant access to as many people as you want from a phone that's in your pocket.
There's people now who are getting, like we were talking earlier on just before we started recording, about guys like Paddy Raff, who created a character with a Snapchat filter and is now performing in the SSC arena.
It's massive.
Yeah.
His thing, and it is massive, it's hilarious, it's instantly accessible. You know, people's attention spans now are shrinking, people have less time to do stuff. So all that stuff in terms of comedy suits them. Short videos, you know, snipping, they can have a wee laugh at it, and then they're away doing emails, they're away off to do yoga, they're away off to meet their friends, whatever. People's lives now are just so cluttered. You know, remember years ago, like, I remember in the 90s and stuff when I was growing up, Thursday nights were a big night for comedy, you know, and I used to always just look forward to the Royal Family on Thursday nights at 9 o'clock. You know, I couldn't wait till that show started. And that's Jim Royal, not the actual Royals. You know,
I think we've talked enough about Newry to know people are not thinking we're talking.
But, you know, I used to look forward to that all week. And 9 o'clock started, and you're, yes, you cup of tea and all, a bit of toast. You watch it and go, oh, brilliant. And then you go, right. And you go, right, can't wait till next week till it starts now. Now, you go on the TV, turn the TV on, Netflix, and then you just chew through a series in a week.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Everything's on demand and when you want it at that specific time, you know?
Which is definitely different from, yet again, setting a timer on a VCR.
Setting, you know, you imagine you're not in the house at 9 o'clock on Thursday. You tape it and all.
Yeah.
Yeah, the world's changing vastly. But, you know, like I still... Stuff I want to... I do videos where I shoot on better cameras and better sound equipment and lighting whenever I can and whenever I want to. You know, there's still an appetite for that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So I'm still going to shoot high quality stuff, but it's just the phone's so handy. It's in your pocket, and the image quality on phones, as I said, is brilliant.
Yeah. Is it mad going from, because I mean, there's loads of people that make wee videos or skits or do comedy videos, but you actually work in the professional context. Is it madness to go from multi-million pound projects to, I'm going to get the boys here on Saturday morning, get up early, and we'll go for a bacon sandwich, and then sell them a new Taxi Joe series?
Like, it's completely different, because, you know, when I'm working in the film industry, TV industry, I'm not involved in the creative aspect of it. I'm not creating anything. I'm not making anything. So I'm not, you know, I'm not part of the project. I'm not part of a narrative at all. Like, so I'm just doing a job. I'm just rigging lights, lighting, you know, rigging frame, you know, doing grip stuff, you know, in terms of the lighting department, you know. It's figuring out how to rig things. You know, it's a challenge in itself, and it's a job in itself. So it just feels like a job. But you get a great feel for, when you're on set, what works, what doesn't work, how TV shows are made, the type of coverage you need, you know, for a certain scene, i.e. the amount of shots you need for certain scenes, the way people shoot things, the way people light things. The speed of the way filmmaking's done now, you know, you have a lot less time. And what I've noticed working in the industry for a long time now is you get less time shooting now. There's less money, you know, the schedules are a lot tighter, especially with TV. So all that wealth of knowledge and experience is just completely invaluable. And then also doing my own stuff, learning by creating my own stuff, figuring out, right, that works, that doesn't work, that video worked, you know, that was too long. A lot of the time when you shoot stuff and you make your own thing, a big problem is the length. You know, you have to be ruthless whenever you make something and shoot something with the editing. You have to be ruthless with it. Cut out anything you think that shouldn't be there. Even if you have a slight doubt on it, get rid of it. Get it out.
Does it break your heart when you film something you really enjoy, but you know it doesn't fit?
Yeah.
There must be material, and you're like, oh, I love that bit. But
three videos and they've all gone really well online. The last week, three or four videos were filmed, and there was one of them we done this great bit at the weekend. It was a really funny exchange between me and my mate Q. He does all the videos with me, and he's been doing the videos with me for years, and he's hilarious. He's very, very talented, funny guy. Like, and we have great crack making the stuff. But there's this brilliant bit we had in the video, you know, and it was really, really funny. But when you're looking at it, it didn't work within the video, you know? It didn't work. It just felt out of place within the video. It slowed the video down, you know? You're watching it and you're going, I'm going to have to get rid of this, you know? But it was also, you know, really funny to me. But then I'm thinking, will a lot of people get this? You know, it's like an inside joke between me and Q, and it was hilarious, like. But you're just thinking, will people watching this get that? And you just have to be ruthless, right? And you just go...
See,
cut it out.
Talking from the live context, I know that because I've seen comedians get up, and maybe they're newer at it, so they'll go up on mic nights and stuff, and somebody will get up and one of their friends will be there, and they'll tell an in-joke and then be like, why is nobody laughing? You're just like, this is brilliant, we love this.
Yes.
But two people out of 50 is no good.
Yeah. So you're not making it for you specifically, you know?
Yeah,
it has to be. You're not, your job as a stand-up, you know, isn't to amuse yourself. It's to make the audience laugh.
Yeah, well, that's the main thing.
Entertain the audience.
And the thing is as well, I mean, you put out a piece and it'll be views and shares, and that's sort of your review. That's how you know it's doing well.
Well, yeah. I think, though, there's a... And I got caught up in this, you know, a couple of years ago. I'm very happy now with the material I'm writing and the content. I think I'm on a good, you know, I'm on a good place. And, you know, it's funny when you're writing, you go through... Not that your moods go up and down, but you go through patches of creativity where you're writing really good stuff. And then you go through patches where you're not, you know, your head's not in the right place to write. Your head's not in the... So like in 2018, I was really, really busy with work, under a lot of pressure at work. We were just figuring out the whole lighting desk thing. And, you know, the material I was coming up with in my spare time for Taxi Joe wasn't as good as it used to be. So then I started looking at the old videos going, what was it about these initial videos that really caught people, you know? And there were more sort of observations. They weren't like what specifically happened in the news today. So I got caught up in the thing of, right, I need to make videos about what's on in the news to get traction, to get, you know.
Current affairs.
And it's not about that. No, you can make stuff about current affairs, but the observation has to be good. Has to be a good observation on that. Now, if something's in the news now, like what I've started to steer away from is politics and Trump and stuff. Because I made a lot of videos in the past of Taxi Joe ranting about politicians or whatever. And I was finding them very preachy when I'm watching them back, you know?
Yeah.
You know, you're getting lost in the... You can, you know, a lot of people say when I'm doing my videos or whatever, the comments will be, oh, he makes a good point there. You can go too far with that. You're making too many good points and then it doesn't become funny anymore.
It's not a character.
It just becomes me preaching about... So the couple of videos sort of slid into that a wee bit. So what I've done is I'm trying to dodge politics as much as I can, because politics now is that ridiculous and crazy that it's a comedy within itself. How do you satirize something that's that ridiculous?
Yeah, that's true.
You know, and that's... Even South Park done that. They've stopped doing Donald Trump stuff because they said the real material is funnier than... You know, they said it's impossible for us to satirize Trump because the stuff that Trump does and he comes out with...
It's funnier than what they could invent.
Exactly. Because the funny thing about politics now is, because it's real, that makes it so unbelievable. That makes it so ridiculous. That makes it so funny. Whereas if you satirize that, you're bringing it down a notch.
Yeah.
It's too obvious. Everyone knows politics is ridiculous. What's the point in ranting about it, you know?
I know. Isn't that mad that the guy who cameoed in Home Alone 2 and fucking runs the White House, you know what I mean? That we're just like, that is something you couldn't invent. Nobody could go, oh, he was in that movie. Like,
yeah, but if you came out with all that, you know, people wouldn't laugh at it.
Yeah.
Before that happened, you go, oh, I bet you know, the guy that, you know, like me coming out with Alan Sugar is going to be the next Prime Minister, it wouldn't be funny. People go, that's ridiculous.
But it might happen.
But if it did happen,
yeah,
there's where the comedy is, you know. It's stuff in real life now is that ridiculous that because it's real, people believe it. But if you made it up, people wouldn't believe it. You know, it's sort of a way.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. For the coming year, so same again, guys, if you've been listening, if you want to check out the stuff, just, I mean, Taxi Joe, you'll find him everywhere, won't you? Joe without an E, by the way.
Joe there and Taxi Joe, yeah.
Taxi Joe.
Taxi Joe.
All one word, or else Beef Balls if you're looking for the stuff. So that's what you've been doing, and that's a character. Mm. What's the 2020 project? Because I know you have a bit of time now before you start back into people work.
Yeah, so I was working there for about 18 months solid, so I'm off now for a few weeks anyway. And my thing now is writing. It's still sitcom, still my goals, still the dream, still what I want to do. So I'm writing away at that. I'm writing the series synopsis for Taxi Joe, and then when you write that, you get into the character more. You get more ideas then for the YouTube stuff. And I want to do 4 like YouTube episodes that are like a sitcom, like mini sitcom episodes, you know.
Okay.
So I've done 4 of those before, the Taxi Joe show, you call it. So I've done 4 episodes. I was really happy with episode 1 and 3. So you were in episode 3, do you remember?
Yes.
The one where you steal. I was really happy with that episode. I thought the end was great. You steal the car and all. Just spoiler alert. Very funny. episode 2 was a bit... episode 4 then, I think parts of it weren't well written, you know. I think it became a bit too generic. It wasn't strong enough observation on the Taxi Joe character, I don't think. You know, I think it strayed a wee bit more towards something a bit more conventional. So my plan is to make 4 really good Taxi Joe show, like sitcom style episodes, if you like. And then
So it's like a demo reel or a calling card.
And that'd be a platform to move on to. Yeah. So, you know, when I go to, you know, pitch for, or my idea, you know, to my idea to get a sitcom made or whatever, is, you know, I want people to look at the material and go, oh, this guy can actually do more than sit in a car and rant about stuff. He's got skills at, you know, directing or shooting or whatever. And just keep working away at that until, you know, and even if nothing comes of it, even if nothing comes of it, love doing it. I just love making that stuff, making me comedy stuff, making sitcom stuff, you know, making me YouTube videos.
Yeah.
I love writing. So yeah, as I say, if nothing comes of it, I love doing it. And that's what it's all about. If you love what you do, you're a very lucky person.
Well, see, one of the reasons I asked you about some of the stuff, that what's the projects coming up, and you're saying about, like, it's hard to cut stuff. Me as a comedian, I'm very self-depreciating anyway. But when I listen back to my material, like, I record most of my sets. When I listen back, it's very easy for me to go, you should have done that, should have changed that, because it's my material. Like, I was asking you, is it hard to cut your own stuff? Like, how you have to be ruthless, don't you? Because I think once you start thinking you're doing a great job all the time, it's probably shite.
The thing, I've done now, like, so many videos. And even before I was doing the Taxi Joe stuff, I was in, you know, done a film course for my degree in Liverpool and stuff. And I was shooting stuff there. And it was a great learning experience to be around people, to shoot stuff in an environment with people that are like-minded. And editing has always been something, you know, it's probably my strongest suit in terms of the technical aspect of filmmaking. And I've always been very good at editing, and I've edited so much now that it's just second nature in terms of binning stuff. You know, I remember first watching Taxi Joe videos, and when you're watching yourself, it was hard to sort of detach yourself from the Taxi Joe character, because it's me playing it, and hearing yourself back and all, you're going, oh Jesus, is that me? Like, but you do it so much now, you just become desensitized to the character, and you're completely out of it, and you can objectively look at the material and go, and be ruthlessly go, that doesn't work, that doesn't work, and just cut the life out of it, you know?
See, that's mad, because there's, like, major Hollywood stars who, I think it's Russell Crowe, there's somebody who doesn't watch any of the movie.
Well, I say, like, I'm sitting here saying but watch
you're making
stuff.
It, you're editing the thing, you can't not
well,
watch
exactly,
it.
Yeah, you see it about, so I don't go back and watch any of them. You know, I'll go back and look at videos and look at comments and look at topics that I did and stuff. And occasionally I might watch one or two, you know, just to see, you know, what can I improve? What can I do better? But when you're editing the stuff, as you say, like, you see it that many times. You've seen it so much by the time you've edited it and you have it done. You know it inside out. And then once you throw it out onto the internet, you're pretty much on to the next one.
See, I think from a filmmaking point of view, that takes a lot of fucking guts with Jordan, because I know before I was a comedian, when I was in a band, we would go to a recording studio and record something, and stuff takes that long to edit and mix. I would fucking hate the song by the end of the...
Yeah.
Because you're listening to the same thing for 6 hours a day, and I was like, I don't even think it's a good song anymore.
Yeah.
Because I'm just listening to it over and over. And you're cutting, and I've seen you cut, it's like, that's a microsecond too long. I need to cut that, and then I need to recut that music to fit in that. And Jesus, the patience for it is.
Well, my thing, like a lot of things, like say if it's me and Q in the car talking about a topic or whatever, excuse me, burping and coughing here, like a tramp. You know, it's me and Q talking. The timing of all the timing is everything between punchline and reaction, and then setup of a new, you know, joke or a new observation or whatever. So the seconds and the frames are even so critical in terms of the cuts. You know, even if there's something, you get a big payoff to a talk between me and Q, I might let it linger for 3 minutes after before we start into something else to give the audience time to digest that laugh and then move on to the next thing.
Yeah. Well, it's the space in the comedy as well. So it's from a live perspective versus what you're imagining the laugh is. And sitcom is a brilliant one to watch that, because those people are maybe delivering lines to a live studio audience and it gets the big laugh and you see the character stop. Now, in normal conversation, you don't stop, you keep talking. But when there's a joke there and an imaginary audience is laughing at it.
They have to wait.
You have to wait?
Yeah.
That's must be weird, because Taxi Joe doesn't shoot. There's loads of material and there's loads of jokes in it, but there's no audience. So you're having to find that space to be like, how long do I wait?
Yes.
How long does this last?
Yes. I know what you mean. With when I'm looking at my stuff and I'm editing me, like, it's more of a, I look at it technically in terms of what works, what points work or whatever. Like, when I'm watching myself back, I'm never laughing, ever. Because it's me. I don't find myself fun. You know, sort of a way.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas if I'm editing something with me and Q or me and you or whatever, and you're coming out with something or Q's coming out with something, I'd be laughing my head off watching it back. Like, if a video coming out on Saturday, it's absolutely hilarious. And it's just Q and my mate, Stephen McCardle. And it is so funny. It's just one shot on my phone. And I've watched it about 200 times. And it's so funny. If that had been me, I wouldn't even watch it. I would only watch it because I have to edit it down and whatever. Yeah. You know, I find them... And I struggle with that sometimes, you know, when I'm working with them. Especially if they improvise and they come out with something I don't expect. Like, even I remember you saying when you're watching video of me and Q or whatever, you can just see me, my face, and you just go, you're just trying to hold in the laughter.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I do struggle with that, you know, because I find him so funny.
Well, that's your corpse and that's all your acting skills. So it's weird, obviously, you're coming from an amateur, we'll just give it a go, you know?
Yeah.
None of us are theatre trained, but it's still funny to do.
Yeah. Well, at least with, you know, a lot of the rants me and Q do, most of them are improvised, you know.
Yeah.
You know, whereas if you're running off a script, at least you know what they expect. You know, if you're improvising and someone comes out with something you're not expecting, that's hilarious. Sometimes you just can't help but just...
Well, I do know just from working with you guys that there's just reams of blooper reels and laughs.
Loads,
like,
of them.
We shot that scene for when we did the Reservoir Republicans, where there was a bit where I was doing the camera, so
yeah.
There's a bit where I'm sitting there in the scene and then you don't see me for it, because we were like, we need to move around because you need to do the camera.
Yeah.
So I think it shows to me nodding my head, that's the one shot.
Yeah.
And then I'm doing the
yeah.
filming.
Yeah.
So it's moving between everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But that was great because we're all sitting around the table, and even though it was scripted, it's very hard to keep six people because you're just like, go, one person's talking, and then four or five people are listening.
Mm.
So it's very hard not to laugh.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like being in school again with your friend and you catch somebody's eye and you're like, oh fuck, don't laugh.
Yeah, but no, it's, you know, it's great. You know, the professional job I have, I love it. Love it. If that's what I end up doing, you know, fingers crossed the film industry still goes really well here. The TV industry still goes really well here, and I'll be working. And, you know, to do this in my spare time, I love it as well. So, you know, I've nothing to complain about. Like,
well, it's not doing too bad. So, you were saying you have a busy 2020, or at least the first half.
Well,
it's not bad to have 6 months of stuff planned out, now, I have to say.
Yeah.
I wish I could say the same with comedy. Be like, oh yeah, next year's sorted.
Yeah.
That'd be great. Otherwise, I still have a real job, so you have to do both.
Well, that's it, you know, you need... Lucky for me, my real job is working in the film industry. So when I'm working in it, I'm learning as well.
Yeah.
It's such an advantage to have, you know.
See, I think it's cool. You and I had a discussion earlier on, and we talked about being from Newry and where we're from. So, like, you were in my class at school.
Mm.
And I was thinking, a lot of people, we talked about earlier on, people say, oh, where we're from, shite.
Mm.
But I know so many interesting people that do so many cool things.
Uh-huh.
You know, like filmmakers, musicians, artists. I'm like, well, yeah, that had to come from somewhere. We had to either learn to use our imagination, or we were...
Well, like,
maybe it comes from the fact
that
there
wasn't anything to do. Newry had nothing. So, you know, I mean, like, even, like, my dad grew up, you know, they didn't have electric in the house until he was well into his teens. You know, so the form of entertainment people had in Newry during the Troubles, because it was a neglected place, was, and even the generations before that, was storytelling. I mean, proper storytelling, like man in a pub telling a story and the whole pub standing there listening to him.
Yeah.
And that you know, that became a thing, and that's where all the characters came from. People used themselves and the people within Newry as their form of entertainment, and you can see where all that came from. You know, you go to London, you get lunatics, characters, the phenomenally talented people. I'm not saying you don't in London, but you go to London, you go to the tubes, it's just like a load of robots going past you. There's no camaraderie, there's no character, you walk in the Butter Crane shopping centre in Newry and it's just full of people standing about talking to each other. Just
yeah.
Talking about what they did at the weekend, nosing into other people's business, figuring, you know what I mean? And you know, you get real rogues and different characters that got trying to, you know, figure things out and, you know, trying to pull a scam or whatever. You know, he's full of people like that. And that's cool. You know, it's so funny. Like,
I think over here as well, in Ireland, it's so weird because I could say to you, yeah, there's loads of towns like Newry.
Mm.
And in that respect, there is. There's so many individual, unique people, but yeah. There's nowhere like Newry.
Nowhere like Newry.
It's such a strange wee place. I mean, I'm doing gigs in Belfast.
In a good way.
I talk about it and people are like, is that real? I'm like, yeah, we actually have a guy. Yeah.
Even the canal. The canal's class. Like.
Yeah.
It looks class. It just runs right through the middle of the town.
But it's dirtier than her.
It's not adds to the character of the place, you know? The bars as well. I remember when I was working in the bars, and when you do the bar circuit working in your full time, you end up drinking full time pretty much as well. You finish your shift in a certain bar, and then you walk to another bar and have a pint. You'd have a pint there, and there'd just be characters all around you talking dumb. You know, I think also too, and you go back years, and you were saying earlier on when people had nothing, I think people had to invent things, make stories up. You know, make their lives up. That's where the Martin Hanlon character comes from. And, you know, Martin Hanlon is Taxi Joe's sort of, the two of them are the main characters of the Taxi Joe type stuff. And he's a truck driver. And all the stuff he comes out with is just lies.
Yeah.
He just makes stuff up to entertain himself, to entertain the people around him. Because he's just a guy who does nothing. But, you know, he's just full of nonsense, full of lies.
Works and lies.
To amuse himself, to amuse the people around him, to enhance his character, to enhance his social standing, you know?
You're obviously going to have so much time you're in a time limit of what you can film, so
yeah.
How many bits is there to do? Because you're going to have to do this, go back to work, and then there's a hell of a gap between when you can create, so it's not like you're...
Well, the idea is if I film enough material, probably not, like to do myself over when I do the next job, you know, just if I just shoot it all and then, you know, then I can edit it when I'm working, you know. But my goal now is to put the head down for a couple of months. We're hopefully planning a white collar boxing event, me and Q, you know, so we're developing a narrative online, a comedy series of videos where me and the Taxi Joe and the Martin Hanlon character fall out, and hopefully the payoff then will be, you know, something else down the line.
See, this could be another thing that comes from our great background of when we used to watch wrestling years ago. Yeah. So you're going to set up a story and it
will finish with a fight. Idea. We'll see, you know, we're in the early stages of planning that out. We'll see if it materializes. It may do it, may not. But, you know, hopefully, you know, we'll try everything we can to get that sorted. And then, you know, we can utilize the popularity of the videos locally, maybe to raise money for charity or whatever, you know.
Oh, that sounds pretty cool. Well, that's a nice note to end on, where you're doing your art and it's going to be something that you end up doing something fun with. We're going to do the same with the comedy club in Newry this year. We're planning a big charity event to take it. It'll sort of be within what we do, but we might move it to another venue. We have other bigger plans, so
yeah,
it's all right. So that means that hopefully between the two of us, we're doing something to make Newry a bit more exciting.
Well, hopefully, yeah. It's as I said, I love the place and I always love the place, and you know. Done a project there a couple of months ago for a school for careers, and it was screened in the Omniplex Cinema in Newry, and it was like they wanted a video, Taxi Joe to do a video advising students on their careers. And it was such a fun thing to do, and I put a lot of work into it. I haven't released it online because it's tailored to kids. It doesn't feel right to go put it online, you know. But they loved it. It was good. It was a really fun project to do, you know.
That's pretty cool, where you get asked to do something that you've created, and they're like, right, you've created this, can you tailor this to what we're at? And you're like, yeah, because that's a nice writing challenge too.
Yeah. And it's different, you know, because a lot of the stuff in comedy I do is vulgar, and when you're improvising, there's a lot of bad language you would use and stuff. This is completely tailored towards people at school, and it's just a different vibe to it.
Here's something that I have now worked into my stand-up, and I've done it a few times. Have you ever noticed that people in Newry swear when they think?
Yeah.
I'll explain this to people. And you know what, this might happen in your town, this might not be unique to just where we're from, but if you were somewhere else, if you went into a bar anywhere else in the world and you said to somebody, what are you having, they might go, can I get a Guinness please? Whereas if you said to somebody in a bar and you go, what are you having, they go, give us a fucking Smellex. Like, the swear when they're thinking, it buys them time.
Yeah.
Give us a fucking I love that.
Yeah,
and it's something brilliant. That I know that I don't. I've lived all over the world.
It's them cursing out their brains.
Yeah,
they're upset think with their faster. Brain. Yeah, they're upset with their brain because the brain doesn't know what it wants.
Yeah,
it's like, fuck you, brain.
You're like, why don't you know what this is? But it's just because I used to work on bars, and it's just something I noticed. I was thinking about it the other day, and I was like, I don't know anywhere else in the world that happens.
Yeah,
so I've lived in Australia and Canada and stuff. Nobody comes up and goes, you know, Can I get a fucking... They don't do it.
Yeah. Brilliant.
Oh, man. Right. Gino, thank you very much for coming to the podcast.
That was an absolute pleasure. Anytime. It was good fun.
See, because we've done all this stuff today, we're going to do another one sometimes, but it's going to be me and you and a good geek out. We need to do a movie one as well.
Yeah, of course.
I think we can probably get about 9 hours out of that one. Yeah. Gino and I spent a lot of our youths, well, I suppose maybe in Uri again, a bit of escapism, watched a lot of movies.
Yes. On the old VHS.
And then the Dovetas, and then the, what is it now, Blu-ray?
DVDs. I've 4K Blu-ray, and then, but for 4K Blu-ray, that's a really weird thing now. Everybody's streaming Netflix, Amazon. Yeah.
That's true. Gino likes the cinema experience. He's got a big old TV and a sound bar.
Oh, wow.
The whole cinema experience.
Yeah, and you don't have to listen to kids chewing their popcorn.
That's true as well. Right, we'll plug you one more time. Gino, when people want to see their stuff, they can type in Taxi Joe.
Or Beefballs into Instagram, into YouTube, Facebook, and we've actually started TikTok now. Don't know what I'm doing on there, but I'm trying to figure it out.
Brilliant. Yeah, just be careful putting the word balls into any Google search, but good luck to you. If that's what you're doing. Gino, thank you very much for coming
on. No problem, pleasure. See you again.
I will stick the links up for this, and we will get this recorded and stick it out. So thanks for listening, guys. If you enjoy the podcast, Darren Matthews and Sometimes Friends, usual crack, like, share, subscribe. Tell your mates that this lad talks to people who are much more interesting than him every week. And I will see you, hopefully. You find me on the Instagram at Darren Matthews Comedy. And I'm on Twitter, Matthews Darren, the usual crack. But if you're listening to this, you probably already know that, and you probably already know me. That's where you saw the link to start. So we shall return, and I'm doing another one on Friday. So there's going to be a wee double podcast this week, because I'm very lazy and didn't do one last week.
Nice.
So enjoy, folks. Gino, say bye-bye.
See you later.